You're listening to Sandy Adams Radio. Pastor Sandy is the senior pastor of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. He's currently teaching through the book of Psalms. Now, here's Pastor Sandy in the book of Psalms as he teaches through chapters 58 through 67.
On October the 3rd, this past year, 13 years to the day that O.J. Simpson was acquitted in the double murders of his former wife, Nicole, and Ron Goldman, he was sentenced in a different case to 33 years in prison for armed robbery. And all across America, the sentiment was that O.J. finally got what he deserved. Former L.A. prosecutor Marcia Clark said the verdict was justice at last. Ron's father, Fred Goldman, he verbalized his animosity. He said, "We're thankful for the verdict. We see him in shackles was incredible. He's going to be in jail for a very long time. We're thrilled. Put him where he belongs. What we finally have is the satisfaction that this monster is behind bars." No love lost there, huh? You know, strong societies insist on justice, and they are appalled at injustice. At times to the point of anger and outrage. And apparently, God understands. Psalm 58 is one of the imprecatory psalms. Imprecate means to curse. And in these psalms, David calls down judgment on evil men. The imprecatory psalms encourage our desire for justice. You know, rather than suppress a righteous eruption, these psalms teach us that the safest way to vent our rage is to bring it to God, to place our feelings at His feet. This is how you handle these feelings for justice. Well, Psalm 58 exposes the corruption in the courts of Israel. You know, when it comes to structural evil, like corrupt politicians or like prejudicial jurists, the psalmist's rage intensifies. It is a terrible travesty when the people that God entrusts with the public good end up with sinister motives. And this is what's exposed in Psalm 58. Verse 1 says, "Do you indeed speak righteousness, you silent ones? Do you judge uprightly, you sons of men? No, in heart you work wickedness. You weigh out the violence of your hands in the earth." You see, Israel's judges were on the take. Decisions were going to the highest bidder. Crooks sat on the bench. You know, America's justice system isn't much better, sad to say. Courts today don't really establish innocent or guilt. They just decide which side has the money to buy the better lawyers. You know, the symbol in our modern society for the judiciary is a blindfolded woman holding a pair of scales in her hand. The scales symbolize fairness and equity. The blindfold stands for objectivity. And thus, our justice system should evaluate the evidence and render verdicts with objectivity rather than prejudice. Sad to say, that doesn't always happen. He says, "The wicked are estranged from the womb. They go astray as soon as they are born, speaking lies." Once again, the psalmist recognizes the innate sinfulness of man. We're born in sin. Deceit and dishonesty are in our nature. Always remember, sin doesn't make you a sinner. You sin because you are a sinner. As David says, they go astray from God as soon as they are born. He says their poison is like the poison of a serpent. They are like the deaf cobra that stops its ear, which will not heed the voice of charmers, charming ever so skillfully. You know, snakes are deaf. If you'll look closely, they don't have any ears. They are deaf, though. Some snakes do pick up ground vibrations, but snakes don't really hear. A cobra is charmed not by the musical sounds of the enchanter, but by the movement of the charmer's pipe. This is what gets the snake's attention. And here the judges are referred to as stubborn cobras. They're unmoved by the truth. Not even a skilled charmer, the psalmist says, can persuade them to act uprightly. And David is angry at this. He says, "Break their teeth in their mouth, oh God." Boy, I love that line. I've prayed that a lot. Just bust them in the chops, God. Break their teeth. Break out the fangs of the young lions, O Lord. Boy, when I see hypocrites in high places, when I see crooks at the controls, I want to react just as violently. Bust them in the chops, God. It just isn't right. Abuse of power is a terrible evil. Let them flow away as waters which run continually. When he bends his bow, let his arrows be as if cut in pieces. Let them be like a snail which melts away as it goes. We used to love to do this when we were kids. You know, find some snails out on the back porch and run and grab the salt shaker, you know, and you sprinkle, you dump salt on the snail. You know what happens? Just sucks right up, just disappears right before your eyes. It's so cool. This is what the psalmist hopes will happen to these wicked judges. He says, like a stillborn child of a woman, that they may not see the sun. Before your pots can feel the burning thorns, he shall take them away as with a whirlwind, as in his living and burning wrath. Oh my. He wishes to see God's wrath on these wicked judges. The righteous shall rejoice when he sees the vengeance. He shall wash his feet in the blood of the wicked. Oh boy, that reeks with animosity, doesn't it? That's not really a nice sentiment. We're going to wash our feet in the blood of the wicked. That's how the psalmist feels. You know, I like how Bible commentator Graham Scroggie defends the psalmist here. He writes, if it is right for God to destroy, it cannot be wrong for his servants to rejoice in what he does. Think about that. We forget how serious God is about sin, that he is angry at evil, that his judgments are perfect even when brutal. So that men will say, surely there is a reward for the righteous. Surely he is God who judges in the earth. Every judge has a judge. God will judge all men. And the corruption of human courts is summed up in the phrase, you've probably heard it, truth is forever in the gallows, wrong is forever on the throne. That's not exactly true. For in the end, the roles will be reversed. Jesus will see to it that wrong is in the gallows, finally, and truth is forever on the throne. Well, the ancient preface tells us that Psalm 59 was written when Saul sent men and they watched the house in order to kill David. You remember, King Saul was jealous over David's successes and his popularity. And so he sent a hit squad out to kill him. The men staked out David's house, and at daybreak, they stormed the house to capture David. But David's wife, Saul's daughter, Michal, helped him out of a window and then stalled so he could escape. The incident began David's life as a fugitive, and it prompted Psalm 59. Deliver me from my enemies, O my God. Defend me from those who rise up against me. Deliver me from the workers of iniquity and save me from bloodthirsty men. For look, they lie in wait for my life. The mighty gather against me, not for my transgression, nor for my sin, O Lord. In other words, I'm innocent. They run and prepare themselves, though no fault of mine. Awake to help me and behold. You therefore, O Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, awake to punish all the nations. Do not be merciful to any wicked transgressors. Selah. And you remember what that means. It means pause and think about this. David wants to see all wicked men punished by God, not just those who seek to end his life. He says, at evening they return. They growl like a dog and go all around the city. Indeed, they belch with their mouth. Words are in their lips, for they say, who hears? But you, O Lord, shall laugh at them. You shall have all the nations in derision. I will wait for you, O you, his strength. For God is my defense. My God of mercy shall come to meet me. God shall let me see my desire on my enemies. Do not slay them, lest my people forget. Scatter them by your power and bring them down, O Lord, our shield. You know, David isn't vindictive as much as he wants to see God's justice prevail. Don't you have that longing from time to time? This world is so corrupt. Bad people get away with their crimes. Good people often suffer. Don't we all just have a longing for justice, for righteousness? This is what David is saying. He doesn't just want God to slay his enemies, but he wants God to make a point. God, show your strength and your mercy in your judgment. He says, for the sin of their mouth and the words of their lips, let them even be taken in their pride, and for the cursing and lying which they speak, consume them in wrath, consume them, that they may not be, and let them know that God rules in Jacob to the ends of the earth. Let them know this, that you're on the throne. Verse 14, and at evening they return. They growl like a dog and go all around the city. They wander up and down for food and howl if they are not satisfied. Saul's evil men are acting like a pack of wild dogs. They howl, but David sings. Howl! But David now sings. But I will sing of your power, yes. I will sing aloud of your mercy in the morning. For you have been my defense and refuge in the day of my trouble. To you, O my strength. You ever say that to God? Oh, my strength. You're my strength. I will sing praises, for God is my defense, my God of mercy. David is writing this psalm from inside his house. The outcome of this trial is yet to be decided. He knows that the dogs, his enemies, are outside. They're stalking him. Saul's men are ready to pounce at the daybreak. But he's confident that come what may, his God will deliver him. Psalm 60 was set to the tune, Lily of the Testimonies. When I get to heaven, I'm going to ask that to be played. I'd like to hear what it sounded like. This was a song, but not just for singing. You know, some songs are not just for singing. Some songs, like this one, are for teaching. Notice the preface, for teaching. And we're given the context. When he fought against Mesopotamia and Syria of Zobah, and Joab returned and killed 12,000 Edomites in the Valley of Salt. Now, the narrative of that story is in 2 Samuel chapter 8. You can go back and read that and read of the incident that precipitated this psalm. Twice we read in 2 Samuel, the Lord preserved David wherever he went. The Davidic blitzkrieg was on. 2 Samuel talks about David's triumphs. But 2 Samuel doesn't tell us what we learn here in Psalm 60. And that's this, that David's victories were won through prayer. You see, like the church, David's army did a lot of its fighting on its knees. 2 Samuel shows David's outer life, his military triumphs. But Psalm 60 reveals the inner life that went with those outer victories, David's broken spirit, David's repentant attitude. And you know, this is really true of the Psalms in general. This is why I love to read the Psalms in connection with their historical place in the history of Israel. Because as all this is going on outside, the Psalms give you a concept of what's going on in the heart of the person who's experiencing them. David and the other psalmists, all that they accomplished externally, they tied to their internal relationship with God. Faith was their gravitational center. Everything that happened in their life sprung from their relationship with God and related back to their relationship with God. Is God the center of your life? Is he the center of all that happens and goes on and how you respond to the events of your life? Well, Psalm 60 begins, "Oh God, you have cast us off. You have broken us down. You have been displeased. Oh, restore us again. You have made the earth tremble. You have broken it. Heal its breaches, for it is shaking. You have shown your people hard things. You have made us drink the wine of confusion." You know, during the reign of King Saul, the nation Israel had been beaten. They had been humiliated. In fact, the Philistines had won some decisive victories. David doesn't mourn over the past. He doesn't blame Saul for their calamities. He recognizes the situation for what it is, and he begins to look to the future. He says, "You have given a banner to those who fear you, that it may be displayed because of the truth, that your beloved may be delivered. Save with your right hand and hear me." Though Saul had forsaken God, there were times in Israel's history where the nation had marched and had fought under the banner of God, and she will again. God has spoken in his holiness, "I will rejoice. I will divide Shechem and measure out the valley of Succoth. Gilead is mine and Manasseh is mine Ephraim also is the helmet of my head. Judah is my lawgiver. You know, the kings all came from the tribe of Judah. It was the royal tribe. It was God's lawgiver. All these places that he mentions here, these were all areas of the promised land that had been captured by the Philistines at this time. But David recognizes that though they were under Philistine occupation, truly they belonged to God. And David intends to retake them, to bring them back under God's jurisdiction, to make them God's land again. He says, Moab is my washpot. Over Edom I will cast my shoe. Philistia, shout in triumph because of me. In the book of Ruth, remember, the taking of a man's shoe was associated with a real estate transfer. Now, a man walked his property with the soles of his shoes. Now, I bought a little bit of property recently. Not a lot of property, a couple of acres. But whenever you come over to my house, one of the first things we'll do, we'll walk the property. Why? I don't know. But I just like to walk the property, and I assume that you do too. Let's just walk the property. This kind of gives you a sense of a man, gives a man a sense of, where's Kathy out? But he gives a man a sense of ownership, you know. It's a manly thing to just get out and walk the property. Well, that's what he's doing here. That's why the shoe was a symbol of ownership, of real estate transfer. And this is why David is singing, over Edom, God will cast his shoe. God will retake this land. He'll own this land. This land belongs to him. He'll own it again. This is why I like the new song that we've been singing recently, God of this city. That God, this city belongs to God. We need to take back our city for God. In essence, we're casting our shoe over our city. Verse 9, who will bring me to the strong city? Who will lead me to Edom? Is it not you, O God, who cast us off? And you, O God, who did not go out with our armies? David knows the reasons for Israel's defeats. Sin caused God to turn his back. But now he recruits God's help again. He says, give us help from trouble, for the help of man is useless. Through God we will do valiantly, for it is he who shall tread down our enemies. Sounds like it could be applied, the whole psalm sounds like it could be applied today to what's going on in Gaza, even as we speak. Israel is once again taking back land that belongs to God. Or not necessarily taking back land, but protecting their land. I prayed this morning with a sister in the fellowship whose nephew is in a tank somewhere in the Gaza Strip fighting for the Israeli army. The descendants of David, who cast his shoe over Philistia, Gaza, and took back that land that belonged to God. Well, Psalm 61 was written by David, and it was played on a stringed instrument. The Hebrew word naganah is singular. Implied is that the song was geared for private rather than for public worship, a solo rather than a band. You know, some songs are like that. They're best, you know, on a single instrument than with a whole band. This must have been a song that was more contemplative than it was celebrated. Psalm 61 may have been written during the rebellion of Absalom. After David had fled Jerusalem and sought refuge out in the Judean wilderness, he prays, hear my cry, O God. Attend to my prayer. From the end of the earth I will cry to you. When my heart is overwhelmed, lead me to the rock that is higher than I. Now David is about 20 miles or so at most from the temple there in Jerusalem, but he feels that he's crying from the end of the earth. He feels abandoned. He feels alone. And he longs for the rock that is higher than I. In other words, he needs help outside of himself. You ever feel that way? That you need someone greater than yourself. You're dealing with problems that are over your head. You're overwhelmed. He says, lead me to a rock that is higher than I. Picture a rocky shore. And a storm is raging, and David is drowning in the surf, and he sees a rock just off the coast, and he tries to get to it, and he reaches and grabs it, and it becomes his anchor, the anchor that he needs. There's safety on this rock. There's perspective from this rock. There's stability with this rock. There is rest in this rock. Hey, Jesus is the rock that is higher than I. He's the supernatural help we need in the rising tides of life. He says, for you have been a shelter for me, a strong tower from the enemy. I will abide in your tabernacle forever. I will trust in the shelter of your wings. David wants to get back to Jerusalem. He wants to get back to the temple. For you, O God, have heard my vows. You have given me the heritage of those who fear your name. You will prolong the king's life, his years as many generations. He shall abide before God forever. Oh, prepare mercy and truth which may preserve him. So I will sing praise to your name forever, that I may daily perform my vows. I like that. That I might daily perform my vows. You know, David was capable of rising to great spiritual heights. At times, his spirit just soared in fellowship with God, in praise of God. But here he speaks of consistency. He says he wants to perform his vows daily. His was a day in, day out devotion to God. Do you have that kind of a devotion to God? Anybody can come to a meeting on Sunday and get all fired up, get all pumped up, you know. But are you concerned about performing your vows daily? Is it a daily thing between you and God? Psalm 62 was written by David, and it was given to Jeduthun, one of the three chief musicians. Interesting, Psalm 61 opens with a shout. Psalm 62 with silence. By the way, did you hear about the woman? She fell in love with this man. The happy couple got married. And yet 3 months into their life together, this lady realized that she had a problem. A marriage counselor informed her that she had married a man who was mute. Her new husband was born with a malady. He couldn't speak. Speech was impossible. Evidently, she had done all the talking to that point and had never stopped to listen to see if the man could even talk. We can make the same mistake in our relationship with God, can't we? We can do all the talking and never bother to listen. Psalm 62, truly my soul silently waits for God. Oh my, sometimes the sweetest praise is silent praise. Words only muddy the moment at times. From him comes my salvation. He only is my rock and my salvation. He is my defense. I shall not be greatly moved. David trusts only in God. You know, trust in God plus something or someone else isn't really trust at all. I had a friend of mine tell me one time, Sandy, it's only when you turn loose of everyone else's hand that you can truly grab on to God's hand. You can truly experience his faithfulness. Faith realizes that God is all that we need. In verse 3, David speaks to his enemies. How long will you attack a man? You shall be slain, all of you, like a leaning wall and a tottering fence. Leaning wall and a tottering fence. Both easily collapse under pressure, don't they? David's hoping for the same plight to his enemies. His enemies only consult to cast him down from his high position. They delight in lies. They bless with their mouth, but they curse inwardly. Boy, you know anybody like that? You know, sometimes, somebody walks up, well, bless your heart. What does that mean? Well, it can mean just about anything. Well, bless your heart. That can be a good thing. That could just be, man, I hate you, but just bless your heart. You don't really know what that means. Bless your heart. People bless with their mouth, but they curse inwardly.
From March the 10th to the 23rd, I'll be leading a tour to Israel, and we would love for any of our listeners to join us. We'll start at the magnificent theater on the Mediterranean, where Paul preached to King Agrippa, and we'll end with worship and communion at the Garden Tomb. In between, it's one exciting adventure after another. Imagine relaxing by the Sea of Galilee one day and floating on the Dead Sea the next, exploring waterfalls in the Golan Heights and admiring the desert from the top of Masada. We'll spend time in the rock city of Petra and in the holy city of Jerusalem. We'll ride camels, wade through Hezekiah's tunnel, boat across the Sea of Galilee, and study God's word at every turn. Hey, a trip to Israel is like a Bible study on steroids. If you've never been, I encourage you to go. And if you like, you can go with us. Our trip is affordably priced. If you'd like more details, please contact us. Here's Josh to give you that information.
Thanks, Pastor Sandy. Yes, to learn more about this exciting trip, visit sandyadams.org. Again, this amazing trip is taking place March 10th through the 23rd, 2019. We encourage you to contact the church office at Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain. You can call us at 770-736-2828 or log on to sandyadams.org. On behalf of Pastor Sandy and the entire production team, it's our prayer that you would seek the Lord about joining Pastor Sandy in Israel in March of 2019.